This week on Culturefile, we're preparing for the Messiah season by pacing the few blocks of central Dublin in which a constellation of chancers, charities, choristers and 18th century it girls resulted in Dublin being the venue in 1742 for the world premiere of Handel's most durable work. I'm walking the area with historian Jonathan Barden, who's been researching the world into which Handel's Messiah was born. This time we've made our way from the former Christchurch Yard to what was the site of the Charitable Music Hall on Fishamble Street, right next to the George Frederick Handel Hotel. Now there's a coincidence.
We are at a bend in Fishamble Street, and it was here that the new music hall in Fishamble Street was built. Today there's only an archway, that's all that's left. In fact, there's really only one illustration of what the music hall looked like. There's that archway that I'm looking at now. Plus, there was an ironworks by the early 19th century called Kennan and Sons. And I'm very pleased to say that the Contemporary Music Centre of Ireland has decided to keep the doorway and indeed Kennan and Sons Limited.
It was a very good site for a music hall because the resource that was particularly required for the Messiah were choristers of one sort or another, and the two cathedrals were just right by.
It would have been quite impossible to perform the sacred oratorio Messiah without the support of the choirs of Christchurch and of St. Patrick's. They were the professionals, and they weren't just boys. Mostly they were paid professional vicars choral who'd be able to read the music and interpret it straight away with the minimum of rehearsal. A lot of interesting documentation survives about the vicars choral and the stipendiaries who were hoping to become a vicars choral. They were not allowed to go to pubs, to taverns, but they frequently did. And quite often they missed rehearsals and missed performances, and they would be fined and that kind of thing. But nevertheless, it has to be said that in the end, they were very good professional musicians.
So if we look through the gateway, there's kind of the interior courtyard of a block of flats. Is that the space of where the music hall was?
That is the space of where the music hall was, yes.
It's quite huge.
It's big enough for 700 people in the audience, so it was really quite large, yes, indeed. And there were boxes and archways and that kind of thing in it. But all we have are poetic descriptions, not any photographs or indeed drawings. We do know of certain people who were there. We certainly know that Dr. Patrick Delaney, who was rector of St. Werburgh's and chancellor of both Christchurch and St. Patrick's Cathedral, that Thomas Sheridan, the father of the famous playwright Richard Brinsley Sheridan. Thomas Sheridan, in fact, was the manager of Smock Alley, which is just down the street, the theatre.
We say all those, the names and what was here and so forth, but is there any feeling for you of what was in this space? It's hard to get it now as the trucks roll by and the towering offices behind us and the coffee shops around us. It's hard to know that something special happened here.
I think it is hard to know, but that is true of so many places. At least we do have a nice plaque that I'm looking at on the building, the Contemporary Music Centre, Kennan and Sons. Perhaps the narrowness of the street, the twistingness of the street, gives some kind of impression of the old medieval city and the early Georgian city. So I can let my imagination rip a bit, I have to say.
So maybe we'll go inside the Handel Hotel and see if he's in there, in spirit.
Dublin had always been the city of the conqueror, you know, founded by the Vikings, and then the Anglo-Normans made it the headquarters of the Lordship of Ireland. And it was where the administration operated from Dublin Castle, and it grew around government institutions, but nevertheless its population was a mixed one. Some survivors from Viking Dublin with names like Searson, many of them Normans, English. The men of Bristol in particular were encouraged to settle here. And by the 18th century, this was the second largest city in George II's Hanoverian dominions. It was actually bigger than Madrid, bigger than Berlin, about the same size as Milan. It thrived on trade, on the gentry coming in from their estates in the wintertime to spend money.
It seems like it was a neighbour of Handel's in Brook Street in London who first suggested that Dublin might be an interesting place for a composer of fashion to visit.
Yes, Mary Pendarve, she was a widow, and she had a house just a few doors down from Handel, and she came here. She was the daughter of a very powerful landlord, the Marquess of Lansdowne, and she had a wonderful time here, entertained frequently at Dublin Castle. She stayed with Bishop Clayton in St. Stephen's Green in the house, which is now Ivy House, the head of the headquarters of the Department of Foreign Affairs. And she came back from Dublin after a year and a half stay, rhapsodising about what a great city this was and he should go there. Handel was led to believe that Dublin had the clientele, it had the musical resources to make sure that any music he put on would be well attended and well funded. You were charged half a guinea to get in. I did some kind of calculations. How much was half a guinea? And it would be about something like 140 euro. You might say, well, that's not too much to pay to hear the first performance of a great work conducted by a great conductor. But you have to remember, most people in Ireland were paid no more than sixpence a day, and you'd be lucky to get work every day of the week.
It's actually about what they charge into Arsenal of a Saturday.
It is. Or in my case, you know, to go and hear Bruce Springsteen in the RDS grounds.
Historian Jonathan Barden there, author of Alleluia, and next time how Jonathan Swift did his damnedest to prevent the Dublin premiere of The Messiah ever taking place. That's next time on Culture File.